Today I'm here with Hayley from Birchbox, and Birchbox is one of the top fashion startups, and I'm very glad to have her here. So Hayley, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So Hayley, I have a question for you before we get too deep into the interview. Can you tell me a fun fact about you that not many people know?
You're turning this around on me. fun fact about me that not many people know. This is a weird one, but growing up, I had a hamster that we had to amputate one of his legs. He only had three legs, but it was fine. He could still climb through all the tubes. His name was Fluffy. He lived a good life with his three legs.
Man, you sound like you're mean. Are you sure Fluffy was okay?
He was fine. We convinced the vet it was the smallest amputation she'd ever performed.
Really?
Yeah.
Fair enough. So, Hayley, tell us about who you are and where you come from. I mean, Birchbox sounds like a pretty amazing company, so tell us a little bit about your background.
Thanks. Yeah, so I'm co-founder of Birchbox, a business that I started with a friend from Harvard Business School about 3 years ago. Before business school, I was working in management consulting at Bain & Company in New York. Got great exposure to a wide range of industries, everything from telecom to retail to financial services, and was lucky enough to work in consulting in 2005 to 2008 when the economy was growing, so lots of growth strategy type stuff. And I'm originally from the New York area.
Okay. I saw a part of an interview that you did with Chris Dixon, and you were talking a little bit about some of the processes that you used to start Birchbox, and you were specifically talking about using Lean. I'd love to hear about how you guys came up with the idea of Birchbox and then how you applied Lean and some of those sorts of things. It sounds like you really nailed it.
Yeah, sure. So we came up for the idea of Birchbox influenced by a lot of different things, one of which was our own experience as consumers, seeing that a lot of categories were shifting online pretty effectively, but realizing that beauty category, one that you really have to touch, try, and feel in order to make a new purchase decision, hadn't shifted online. And also seeing, the group buying, the flash sales, seeing that a lot of the innovations in online retail were discount driven, and thinking that there was a better way to do that specifically for beauty. So our vision was to create a discovery commerce platform, a way for brands to get their products in the hands of customers that would value it, and to help customers discover new products and new brands that they would love.
You were taking the Groupon model a little bit and then applying it to beauty and to fashion.
Not exactly. So the Groupon model is quite different. What we're focused on is new customer acquisition, but at the beginning of a product life cycle, the beauty industry is really driven by product launches, by changing trends. And there was this built-in industry behavior of sampling, but that was traditionally done as a loyalty program for existing customers. And what we saw was an opportunity to create an online platform that could sample to new customers in a targeted and ROI efficient manner. So getting customers to opt into this experience, to pay $10 to say, Birchbox, please send me a selection of high-end products tailored to me and my needs and preferences. And through that, help them discover new things that they wouldn't have considered otherwise, and for the brands, help them find new customers and get a great return on investment for their sampling dollars.
And so how did you come up with the idea?
The kernel of the idea was this idea of sending a monthly personalized assortment of products to a customer's home every month. Definitely influenced by the idea of a magazine, you know, being able to get a physical product into customers' homes that would really get their attention. And then we realized that just like a magazine, being able to put those products in context to tell customers why they're great, how to get the most out of them, would be important. So we do that through writing editorial articles, having how-to videos on our site. And then lastly, the third piece of the try, learn, buy model is the fact that we sell full-size versions of the products that we sample. And that's important for the customer experience, you know, to have that happen seamlessly, but also really essential for our brand partners who needed us to track the conversion rates of our sampling efforts.
But so in the initial, like, coming up with the idea, is this something that, like, did you analytically figure it out through looking at lots of different business ideas, or was it something that you wanted yourself? Like, where did the, what was the original thing that you said, like, okay, we want to do this, and then we're going to do a whole bunch of lean validation to make sure that it'll work, and then you went forward?
Good question. Yeah. I mean, the idea really found us. You know, Kathy and I were in business school, and we weren't one of those students that was, like, dead set on finding an idea before we graduated. We just started playing around with this idea of product discovery through targeted trial, and we couldn't stop thinking about it. You know, and then we had a decision point. We were like, we can write a business plan, you know, like a Word document about this, or we can get out there in the world and see if it'll actually work. And the, you know, the latter just sounded way more fun. So we quickly went from brainstorming to actually contacting beauty brands and asking them to participate in a beta test.
How many brands did you start with?
So our beta test was pretty limited in scope. We wanted to send out 2 months of Birchboxes to 200 customers. You know, and Birchboxes have, you know, at that time they had 4 products in them. Now it's, you know, 4 to 6. So we needed 8 brands to give us 200 samples each in order to, you know, get the beta test started.
So this was your, so you had the idea, you guys couldn't stop thinking about it, and then you said, okay, we're going to do a test of 8 products to 200 people to see if it works. So then you went and found 8 brands that were willing to give you enough product, and that was the start of your test. Is that kind of how it came together?
Exactly. Yeah, we're a platform business. We could have started on the customer side, or we could have started on the brand side. But it was really obvious to us, and still is, that, like, you know, the success of our product depends on having great brands and great samples. So we started there, getting the commitments from these 8 beauty brands. Then we built the site, and then we went out and we got customers.
And so, had that failed and you hadn't have been able to get those 8 companies on board, you would have said, okay, maybe this idea isn't the right one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was the point of the beta. It was sort of a proof of concept. We needed to prove 3 things, essentially. The first was, will brands want to work with us? Like, do they think that this is a pain point, being able to shift beauty product sales online? Our first meetings confirmed that, you know, we were in the right place at the right time. They were seeing the shift, that they wanted to have, you know, a better way, a better partner to be doing it with, and we were that answer for them. The second thing we were testing was, will consumers pay for samples? As I said before, sampling was traditionally done as a loyalty program, sort of as a free gift with purchase. And so our idea that customers would be willing to pay for a surprise set of targeted samples was a big behavior change and something that we needed to prove. And lastly, in terms of making the economics of, like, the business model work, was testing whether if we sent these samples to the customers, would they turn around and buy full-size versions of the products that they sampled. And those 3 things were what we tested in the beta test.
So why did you build the site? Like, for example, why not, you start with the brands, why not then just, like, pass around flyers at your university to get 200 sign-ups and test it that way?
Yeah, I think a few reasons. First was that we were committed to having sort of an unbiased panel of customers for our tests. So we made sure to reach out to people who didn't know us that weren't, in the bubble of, being on campus. So that was just in terms of like the customer side. In terms of why a site was necessary, was that, we had a big vision from the beginning that what we were building was the best place to buy beauty products online, and that would be made possible through personalization based on profile and behavioral data that we would get both explicitly by customers telling us what they wanted, but also implicitly through their like browse behavior, purchase behavior, all of that, and website necessary for that, and even in the beginning.
So this is why you weren't able to stop thinking about it all the time, because you realized all of that extra data that you're going to be able to get.
Yeah, we love data.
Okay, so you built the site, and then you drove a bunch of sign-ups through what, Google and Facebook, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so we use sort of like a friends of friends method. My co-founder and I each made a list of 20 people we knew in different stages of their life in different cities around the country. So people in law school in Chicago, or someone who is a young mother in Arizona. And we sent those friends an email saying, we're testing something, and we don't want you to sign up, but we would really love if you forwarded this to any distribution list that you're on or to your friends that you think might be interested. And those 40 emails, we used MailChimp, we were able to see that those 40 emails turned into thousands of opens, and we were able to get that 200 customer. We reached that 200 customer mark pretty quickly.
Wow, that's very smart. I've never heard of anyone doing it that way before.
Yeah, it worked well for us. And I think, part of it was that we were really open, being like, this is a test, this is something new. By signing up for this, you're helping us figure out if this new idea will work.
Yeah, I mean, that's an even another more huge validation there, because instead of having to force it through by buying media and dealing with all the hassle of that, you just. Yeah, that's really interesting. I guess that shows that maybe there's still a lot more that can be done in the fashion space, because all of the angry white men, we don't really understand these sorts of things as you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, we've been lucky that the beauty and lifestyle category is an inherently social category. So the way that we got those first 200 customers, even now, like 3 years later, the vast majority of our customer acquisition is through word of mouth, both offline and online, and unpaid. We're not really in the optimizing CPAs type game.
Right. So you got your 200 sign-ups. You shipped 2 months worth of Birchbox to people, and so then what happened?
Yeah, so we got the sign-ups, we shipped out the boxes, there was we like built them ourselves in our campus apartment. And then what happened is we looked to see how customers would react. So we were checking to see those conversion rates. Were people logging back into the site to read the content we had written about the product and pressing those buy buttons to get full-size versions? We were really happy with the conversion rates that we saw, and we were able to sort of package up that 2 months' worth of data and those learnings. And go back to our brand partners and show them that like the pilot tests that we had run worked well, and that we were planning on graduating Harvard Business School without jobs in order to launch Birchbox full scale. And that's what we did.
Did you pay the partners for the samples?
No, we did not. And that's still how it works. Sampling is an important part of how the beauty industry, it's their marketing expense. And basically, we were telling them, take this existing marketing expense and shift it to Birchbox, and we'll get you a higher return. We'll be able to get more impressions for you. We'll be able to generate more sales, both through, our shop on Birchbox, but also in other channels.
Right. And so there was actually, I guess, there was three key components of your model that you had to validate, right? You had to validate, would the companies give samples? Were consumers interested? And then was there going to be a good enough conversion rate on samples to make it worthwhile?
Exactly. Yeah, we like to call it, it's like this virtuous cycle that there's a win-win between if we're doing the right things for the brands, then the customers will be happy, the customers will buy more products, the brands will see a better ROI, they'll give us more samples, you know, and it sort of goes around in this sort of like flywheel effect that also helps us scale. And as we scale, we're better able to target those samples based on customers' profiles and their, you know, their past behavior, and it just sort of snowballs from there.
Right. And so, are you able to talk about conversion rates that you see?
Not in detail, but we've been able to scale significantly. I think our last published subscriber figure was that we are well over 300,000 subscribers, and that's a lot of samples. So the brands are very happy with the return that we're able to give them.
So that means every month there's at least 300,000 subscribers that are paying you $10 a month to be a part of this program, which I guess effectively covers shipping and handling on your side. Maybe you get a little bit of money out of that, and then do you make commissions then from the brands when people come and buy stuff?
Yeah, so our two main revenue streams are the subscription side, but then also we are a retailer of the full-size product. So when we sample something, we take inventory of that product, and we, you know, work hard for the brands, but also work hard for ourselves to make that conversion happen. So it's not commission.
Wow,
we're a retailer. Yeah.
So you have warehouses somewhere handling all this stuff?
We do. We work with a third-party logistics partner in New Jersey.
So what do you do if you have a whole lot of inventory that doesn't get sold?
We're actually really lucky that over time we've been able to build great predictive models of what will sell based on category and price point. You know, so we can look back and see if we send a $20 eyeliner to this many people within a margin of error, what do we expect the full size sales to be in what time frame? So we really get to limit inventory risk in a way that a traditional e-commerce site isn't able to. You know, we create our own demand. We don't have to wait for demand to happen to us.
And I guess also what you can do is very easily do some sort of a test to see if something is going to work, and then you'll have your conversion rates, and so then you can go ahead and do it.
Exactly. Yeah, we do that pretty frequently. We'll sample a smaller amount of a product, then we'll see, you know, which demographic converted higher, and then next time we'll sample a lot more, and we'll target it appropriately so that we're sending it to the people most likely to love it and to buy it.
So out of this, of course, then you'll be able to make your own line of fashion stuff, the Hailey lipstick and everything else. You must have talked about this.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that could be in our future plans. For now, we're committed to working with our brand partners, and we give them a lot of that data, too. It almost becomes like a real consultative relationship in that we're helping them figure out what should they be launching in the fall. What should the packaging look like? What size should the sample be? We're able to feed a lot of our learnings back to our brand partners.
And I guess this is an outside company that has to do it. It's not something that any one brand can do because you need a lot of brands to make it work.
Yeah, and it's that same insight that we had in the beginning with the test was that we needed great brand names to bring in the customer. You know, what the customer is looking for isn't to get private label stuff manufactured all in one place. What they're looking to do is sort through the clutter of the beauty industry and figure out what mascara is right for them, what lip gloss they love. And seeing recognizable brand names is really important, but then also discovering new ones. Like, so we work with a lot of really small niche brands that would be hard to find, even in New York, nonetheless, in, you know, more rural places in the country.
And I mean, I guess that's going to be one of the things that, I mean, I imagine you're doing it now, is that if someone is starting some sort of a company that in beauty, then it would be worth paying a huge premium to be able to get in a monthly Birchbox, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we're a great way to launch a brand. We made an acquisition in Europe a few months ago, and a big reason for that was the ability to cross-pollinate brands across across borders. So, you know, we're taking French brands to the U.S. who don't have a retail presence here, and we're able to sample them to a large base of customers and, you know, launch them successfully. And we're also doing that for U.S. brands and bringing them to Europe.
Hmm. So are you running in Europe now as well?
Yep. After we made the acquisition in September of last year, and that gave us a presence in the UK, France, and Spain.
Oh, okay. So I guess you'll continue to expand countries like that?
Yeah, I mean, we really feel that what we're doing for customers is a universal need, and also our brand partners, you know, the big beauty brands, they're increasingly global, and we're committed to being able to serve them in the markets that are important to them.
Hmm. So how do you do customer acquisition? Is it all just word of mouth, or you're out there pushing it?
It's vast majority is word of mouth, and of course we do what we can to encourage that. Our initial growth, I attribute to two main things. The first was that we were able to tap into this existing community and conversation that was happening online with beauty bloggers and beauty vloggers on YouTube, very large active community, that, you know, a few of them started getting Birchbox, blogging about it, making videos, and it sort of caught on like wildfire. And it became a thing that, like, everyone talks about their Birchbox each month. And the same thing was happening offline, where, you know, one person in the office would get a Birchbox. It's this bright pink box, very visible. They'd open it at work. All the girls would come crowd around. And then, like, the next month, there'd be 5 Birchboxes arriving to that office. And then the next month, 25. And, you know, we've heard all these stories about the mailroom just turning pink every month. Because people wanted to be involved in what was like a social activity and a community experience of opening and sharing the Birchbox.
I think you can tell that was not a design by men, because if it had been us that had done it, it would have been a dull beige color that no one could notice.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we actually took cues from the Netflix red envelope. You know, when you started seeing Netflix envelopes around, I think that was probably a useful customer acquisition tool for them, and, you know, and something that we wanted to mimic. And then the second thing is that, you know, it sounds traditional and not very techie, but PR has been a big engine of growth for us. You know, I'm definitely more of like a data and a numbers person, and I was skeptical at first, but it's measurable. You can really see the impact of press hits, whether they're online or broadcast or in magazines. And we pretty quickly took PR in-house and have a team here that's constantly working all the different angles for Birchbox when it comes to press.
All right. I guess this is probably a little different to your typical PR interview, though.
This one? I don't know. We do a lot of tech interviews, so I'm used to these questions.
So most of your, so this is interesting, because then the model is at $10 a month, so that doesn't give you a huge amount of margin, I would imagine, to go doing media buying, so you're reliant on things like PR, but I guess because there's so much demand that it kind of cuts through the market and you are able to get a lot of traction with it. Does that sound right?
We have healthy margins on both sides of our business, on the subscription box as well as on the full-size product sales in our shop. But of course, scaling helps. So having over 300,000 people paying $10 a month is great. And then a big portion of them are buying full-size versions of the products on the site too.
So I guess that'll be next, is when you'll start buying a ton of media to scale it even quicker.
Yeah, I think, you know, for us, we've grown incredibly quickly. We had to basically throw out all our initial projections and just realize how much demand there was. But we always have to balance supply and demand, and we need to make sure that we're giving a great experience to our customers as well. The second we put something in a box that is below our standards, that's when our customer loses trust. So we've been very, very careful about quality and quantity as we've scaled.
And I guess that's the model is naturally reinforcing, because you need to have the quality both for the customers but then also for you, because if you put something bad in there, then it will not make sales and also cause trust issues with the customers.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Our incentives are aligned both with our consumers and with our brand partners. It's something that internally at Birchbox we call like the win-win-win, and personally it's something that makes me so excited to be building this business, is that you don't have to be hiding anything from any of the stakeholders. It just makes sense for everyone when it's done right.
And do brands really like what you're doing?
Yeah, we have over 400 brand partners, and we create very deep relationships with our brand partners. Some of them through Birchbox have grown from being relatively small to being much, much larger. And as I said before, it's almost like a consultative relationship where they really go to us to ask questions about trends, about packaging, about what we're seeing out there with our increasingly large customer base.
So let's say I decide to do a brand extension. I have my site, which is Meet Innovators, with all of these interviews, and I decide to make Adrian's Meet Innovators perfume, and I want to come to you to launch my line of internet perfume. How would that conversation go, and like what would I pay you, and how does all that get started?
That's amazing, by the way. I love that concept. There needs to be internet perfume. So brand conversations typically, if it's a new brand, what we talk about are their goals. Is their goal to reach as many people as possible with the samples, to create awareness, tap into like the social media conversation that we create each month, or are they much more focused on the ROI on perhaps a smaller sampling investment? We want to learn about who their target customer is. Some of the brands that come to us, they actually want us to help build their social media presence. So basically, we try to understand what their goals are, and we design a campaign appropriately. But the way it works is that the brands would give us samples, and we would place an order for full-size products based on what we expect the sales to be. So they're not paying us.
So if I come to you, so I have my Meet Innovators internet perfume that I want to test. how much in terms of samples and then full product and then money do I have to pay to get that started? How do you look at that?
Yeah, there's every deal.
Internet perfume is silly and we won't run it?
We say no to brands all the time. a few months into launching Birchbox, the scales definitely tipped, and we had a lot of people reaching out to us. We're very discriminating about products. One really important factor for us is the retail channel that the product's sold in. We exclusively work with brands that are sold in prestige channels. So we're not working with the lower priced brands being sold in drugstores, for example, and that's a big reason that we say no. And also our brand partners have to reach a certain scale, be willing to commit a certain number of samples, but we're flexible around that. And every deal really is different based on what the goals of the brand partners are. What we've built here is almost like an agency. It's like a media agency. that gets paid in samples.
And so are you saying then that no brands can pay to be in the Birchbox? It's always they give you samples and then you make money on the sales?
Yeah, it's really important that we sort of, just like a magazine, that we like maintain editorial independence and that people trust us about what we're putting in the box didn't go to the highest bidder, but instead went to the brands that we believed enough that the product was great, that we would want to send it out to our customers, that we would want to take inventory because we know that people are going to like it and they're going to want to buy it.
But the thing is, a little bit like with your model, I mean, no one could have predicted beforehand that Birchbox would be as popular as it is, but it really is. It's sort of an unexpected success. My Meat Innovators brand internet perfume could be an unexpected success like that as well.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, we have these like black and white criteria about like distribution channel and being able to sample to a certain number of our customers. But yeah, besides that, we're comfortable in some cases making what are the qualitative decisions based on, we have merchants, they're sort of like buyers, and we have editors who have opinions about products as well.
Okay, I'm feeling a little bit left out here, but I guess I'll work with it.
I want to smell your perfume. You're only a few blocks south. We should have a meeting in person.
Okay, maybe we'll do that. Internet perfume, I think there's potential here. I think there's something you're missing. I'll have to develop a validation model for it and test it. Can you tell me a little bit about how's the retention working?
So customer retention is something that we focus a lot on, and we're really proud that Birchbox is a very sticky proposition. We see fantastic retention numbers, and the way we look at it is really revenue retention, seeing how many people stick around as subscribers, but then also how much are they spending in our shop and how much are they gifting Birchbox. Gifting is a really big revenue stream for us as well. And we manage that really closely. We have a great marketing team that works on sort of like the CRM for subscribers, knowing what messages to send them at which point in their life cycle. And we've tuned that over time to be very, very effective.
Are you able to talk about how many months your typical retention sign-up is for?
No, I'm sorry. We don't share that.
Okay. It's my job to ask.
Yeah, no problem.
Where do you think this will go? You're obviously dealing with a lot of growth, and that presents a huge set of problems in itself. You'll be able to make and test your own product ideas, and you've basically got the best science lab in the world, I think, for doing that. Would that be an approach to start different brands? Will it be more scaling the concept internationally? For example, I guess because you have the main $10 a month Birchbox right now, will you have a $35 a month Birchbox? Like, where do things go?
Yeah, I mean, one of the fun things about this business is that there are a lot of options, and there's so much room for growth, both in what we're already doing and in some of the extensions that you mentioned. In the near term, we just see a ton of headroom in continuing to scale our existing model. We have made moves in the past year that have helped expand our sort of like strategic footprint. One of those was the acquisition in Europe, and the other was actually like a year ago in April, we're coming up on our one-year anniversary of launching Birchbox Man, which is the Birchbox product, but tailored to the male customer. It's actually a mix of grooming and lifestyle products, so it's not just personal care, it's also accessories, so everything from socks to headphone organizers to bottle openers. And we've seen great traction with that new type of customer. And it's also helped establish Birchbox as more than just a beauty site. We really view what we're doing as like a lifestyle approach to selling beauty and grooming. We often do limited edition boxes, so one-time discovery experiences that are not a subscription, but are an opportunity to discover new products. So we did that with Birchbox Man. We tested the Birchbox Man subscription before we launched it with a limited edition box. And we've done two home boxes, so entertaining, kitchen, food type products. And we'll continue to test new categories through that limited edition box approach.
And so the Birchbox Man edition is running now, is it?
Yep, it's been going for a year. You should sign up.
Yeah, no, I will.
And it's the men's product, we've learned a lot. It's a smaller overall opportunity, grooming compared to beauty is a smaller market, but it's growing quite quickly. And there's less competition and fewer options for the customer. So we're seeing very loyal customer behavior. And then we're also observing firsthand the difference between shopping behavior between men and women. The guys, when they find something they like let's say they find a soap that they really love, they're going on site and they're buying a lifetime supply, 12 at a time.
Right.
Sort of this search and destroy approach. As opposed to the women who are buying the one thing they liked and trying one other thing, and then they'll come back and buy something new the next month. The guys are creating caches of product for
that's a female fashion approach where you buy all the same sweaters and shoes and all that sort of stuff so that it's very easy to know what to wear.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. And so I'm going to have to take a little dig at you here. I mean, what is it with all of this forest naming of companies? I mean, we have Amazon that started out in books and is now going to sell everything, and Birchbox, which has started in samples. I guess I can see where you're going with this. Am I right?
Sorry, the question was naming our company after a forest?
It's the forest type naming. It's starting with something very narrow. Amazon started with books and is now selling basically anything.
Yes.
You guys with the Birchbox name, is your intent to go as broad as Amazon using your collector's edition?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Good question. And we did choose the name Birchbox purposely to be something that would be extensible, right? That we didn't want to call it Beauty Box or Pretty Box. As soon as we came up with this business model, we knew it would apply to beauty really well, but we were so excited to apply it to other verticals too. And we've really done that with the lifestyle aspect of Birchbox Man. One way to describe what our big vision is that while Amazon is a great place to go and buy functional items that you already know you need, it's this really easily searchable database. What we're building with Birchbox is the best way to buy products in categories where you need to be given inspiration, you need to have that trial experience, so you need to read articles that put that product in context. So we're not just fulfilling demands, we're creating demands and then fulfilling it. And that's the categories where that works are categories like beauty and more broadly lifestyle.
So I'm curious on how you've been finding the tech space. I mean, there's a lot of dorky guys around, and you're having to not only work with dorky guys but manage them and deal with all of that sort of stuff. How is, in a fast growth company, that's got to be quite challenging sometimes.
not an issue for us. I have a long history of really enjoying working with dorky guys. I went to Harvard College undergrad, and I was probably one of 10 women that took the Intro to Computer Science class. I've never shied away from that sort of environment. We have in the U.S. office, we have about 120 full-time employees, and we're close to 80% female. And our tech team, not on purpose, but our tech team is very heavily is more female than the average tech team. Our CTO is female. She has a PhD from Carnegie Mellon, and we have a lot of really, really smart female engineers and product managers working at Birchbox as well.
That's got to be an unusual internet company environment. I'm surprised I haven't really seen that discussed around on the net. That's something maybe more people should be aware of.
I agree. Yeah, no, we're really proud of it. And, you know, you might think that maybe they work here because they like makeup, but that's really, some of them do like makeup. But they're just excited to be working on really interesting technical challenges and problems. And they've created a really great culture on the tech team specifically, where they could really have ownership over like the features and the projects that they're working on.
Cool. Is there anything you'd like to tell us which we haven't discussed?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
Okay. Well, Haley, thanks very much for doing the interview.
Thank you. This was fun.